Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
Adam Amin, television voice of the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, he's more kidding! The steal! Right for the lead! Yeah!
Big time plays! Big time plays!
And the Cardiac Bulls have to win again!
Elizabeth!
It's the big one!
I'm coming, Elizabeth!
Oh, Lord!
MLB NFL play-by-play broadcaster for Fox.
Look! It's scooped up by the Bears! Back the other way! Jonathan Owens! Touchdown, Chicago!
Adam Amin on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Oh, my God! I cannot believe this!
Impossible!
You know, typically he would be joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, but he is here. He is in the house as we broadcast live through the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Adam Amin, the play-by-play man for all seasons, the DJ who will just show up at your taco shop and rec shop. He is everywhere, and you are nice enough to be in studio with us
so
today.
So happy to be with you guys. A justice drop, by the way, by our production crew today. Well done. That was awesome. Great to be with you guys. Great to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's always great to visit with you. I get frustrated when I talk to you because I have so much I want to talk about over the span of so many different sports.
But and we have two segments today for y'all.
Yeah, how about it?
But we got to start Bulls, obviously.
Sure, sure.
So this is not necessarily where everybody wanted the Bulls to be in terms of play-in week.
Right.
But they're here now.
They're here.
We're here. They're two games away from being in the playoffs at the eight seed if they can find a way to beat Miami for the second time in a couple of weeks and then beat the loser between Orlando and Atlanta. You have to like their chances based on the way they're playing and based on where everybody else is with injuries and departed players from trades and everything else.
Yeah, I think this is a play-in group that I if you were to ask like Jamal Mosley, he's like, yeah, I think we can win two games. If you ask Eric Spoelstra, if you ask Billy Donovan, like everybody in this group feels convinced that they can win two games. Quinn Snyder, I'm sure, would say the same thing. So it's that type of group. It's that the East has been fairly middling this year. It's a very top-heavy conference. Cleveland's been phenomenal. Boston, I still think, is the biggest threat out of the East. The Knicks, I don't know if the narrative about Tibbs running his guys into the ground is as accurate as some people might say. I've read some stuff that maybe indicates it's not. But those are the three teams that are the biggest threats. Milwaukee's got a ton of question marks. I don't think Indiana's as good as they were a year ago, even though they've gotten better defensively. Detroit's young and fun and exciting. They're not, I don't think, prepared for this stage yet of this type of series, but I think they'll be a tough out against the Knicks. All that being said, you go into the middle of the pack, and all these teams are very, very similar. So I'm sure all four teams kind of go into this next 5 days, 4 days, thinking, yeah, we've got a shot to win two games, and everybody's expecting to get there. I think where the Bulls are at, I said this the other night, it feels a little bit different, and I can't put my finger on why. I do think it's a different vibe this year. Maybe it's because there's been a roster change, and because you have different players filling different roles, and you know, Kevin Herter's new but playing well, and Zach Collins is your backup big, and Kobe's having the type of season that he's having, and Giddy has played as well as he has in the second half. So maybe it feels different because of that, and it's not Zach and DeMar and Vooch and let's hope for the best. Maybe that's why it feels that way. But it does have a different vibe to it this time around than maybe it did the last couple of years.
I think the difference may be that the expectations were what they were for this team.
Sure.
And they've outplayed them. Like, we just played the cut coming back of you and Stacey reacting to the win against the Lakers. I was in the building just screaming in a corner by myself.
I gave you a hug afterwards. Like, have you seen anything like that? Like, we saw each other right after the game. We're like, that's one of the coolest things we've ever seen.
And I think we'll get into a little bit of that, the aftermath, because that was fun just being a part of that. But that's a good example of this team showing that they have defied the expectation every time. And you do get credit for that in seeing what they want to do. Does anybody question what the Sixers are doing, for example, protecting their top six pick? No. And that's the interesting part of this is I think the fan base would have understood either way. You know, but you're seeing them do the thing where they're winning games. They want to win games. Billy Donovan tells you why. And that makes this a little bit different to process.
I think it's, we always joke about it with like Coach of the Year awards. Coach of the Year awards are strictly, did you have the best team and you happen to be the coach of them? Or did you have extremely low expectations and you surpassed them? I think because, and I've said this publicly, and it's not a knock, I don't think, on the front office. It was frustrating for fans, and I think for some of us who cover the team as well, to just not really know what the direction was going to be after the trade deadline. And then, you start to talk to people and you get a little bit more clarity, and it makes a lot more sense once you actually hear people behind closed doors talk about it. It makes a lot more sense. But I think when the first trades happened, when the LaVine trade happened and the first press conference takes place later that week, I just don't think there was a lot of clarity from the front office. That's their fault, right? Like, if you're upsetting the fan base, that's on you. You have to do a better job of giving your message and clarifying the message. Once the message seemed clarified and you heard basically, like, I don't think this group wants to lose games. I don't think Kevin Huerter is going to play at a level that's going to make you think, all right, they're tanking. I don't think Billy Donovan's the type of coach that's going to want to do that. And I don't think guys like Coby White and Josh Giddey, especially Giddey, who's playing for a contract, essentially, I don't think these guys are suddenly going to go, all right, well, I'll give you 25 minutes and then, pull me. I don't think that's the player or coach mentality. Tanking, as we've seen it in the Eastern Conference this year, because we've seen Toronto in the last couple of weeks, so Washington, Charlotte, Philadelphia. Tanking is, we have players, they're hurt, whether they're for real or not, they're not going to play. We're going to put out a roster on the floor every night that's probably going to lose you games. And I think for like a week, fans, other people around the league, and some of us may have even thought, all right, are they just going to put out a roster that's not going to be nearly good enough to do the things that they've done in the last 20 games? Because the roster they have now is good enough to go 15-5 over a 20-game period. It's probably good enough over a 40-game period to win you like 25 games, right? Wow. It's probably a pretty decent looking team when you put players that want to play and that have high basketball IQs and they all play together and they all figure out the system. They look like a really good team over the last 20 games. So when the messaging wasn't clear, I think that was where most of my frustration came. Once the message was a little clearer, I go, yeah, this is a good group of players that play well together, and the sum of their parts is probably better than what the individual players who were exceptional were doing prior to that.
Let's go back to that messaging, because in my opinion, based on where we are right now, it seems like Arturis Karnišovas got actually what he said he was after, which is,
I think so,
we're going to make a push, and if we get in, fine. If we don't, we do have our own pick. It could be a lottery pick. And now we're on the precipice of this. They would have single-digit odds to get a top four pick, which is not great, but it's still something. And if they get in, well, look what we did with these young players getting in. And now the only downside to that is you're going to have to pay Josh Giddey maybe more money than you thought you'd have to pay Josh Giddey to keep him around.
You might have a $50 million backcourt, $50 to $60 million backcourt if you really want to make that move. And that is going to be the top. That's the biggest storyline looming over this franchise in the next 2 months, is not just who are they going to draft, but are they going to pay this guy? And are they not just are they going to pay him, are they saying you're one of the two or three cornerstone pieces of a franchise now after you got benched in the playoffs last year? Like, that's I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do. I'm not saying that's the narrative that should take place, but that's what you're doing. You're investing and saying Josh Giddey, Coby White, Modest Bouzelis, you're the three players that are now going to be looked upon in the next 4 years to get this team into a position where they're going to win not one, but maybe two playoff series and actually contend to go to the NBA Finals. That's the goal. That's every team's goal. And you're saying we're going to spend $50 to $60 million a year on these two players, and then in 2 or 3 years, You're probably going to have to pay Matis Buzelis at some point as well. So I think you're investing a lot in just the next 3 months. It's what makes it exciting to be a part of this franchise and cover this franchise, but it also is a little bit nerve-wracking for fans who have been kind of sitting in this middling area following this team for the better part of 10 years.
And I think given the history of this front office, which is now enough time to say, not only are you seeing the second generation of some of your decisions where you give Patrick Williams, for example, another contract, you know, and that's been discussed. And we've had people like Casey Johnson on saying, you know, are they going to bid against themselves again in a way? Mark Schanowski, I think, alluded to that exact quote.
Sure.
Or we have people who are close to the organization on, it's not just the decisions they've initially made. You know, now we're getting into the second generation of some of the decisions that they have. So how are we further evaluating this group? Like, this is enough of a body of work, I think, with especially in the NBA, with this front office and coaching staff, to say, you know, we need to know what the direction is, understanding what you came into.
I another messaging thing that I think got a little bit more clarified over time was like, well, we want 9 to 10 really good players rather than going after superstars. And at first, you hear that and go, it's been 20 years since a team did that without like a true star. And by the way, Rip Hamilton's a pretty damn good player. And Ben Wallace was a pretty good player. Like, that Pistons team was really good. Chauncey Billups was a really good player.
Right.
Like,
that wasn't in the league.
Those weren't like a bunch of like guys off the scrap heap. Those are really solid NBA players who put out great careers. But it makes more sense to me now the more you look at, like, where's the second apron going to be? Because that second apron, talking to multiple GMs around the league, that second apron is a huge albatross around every GM's neck right now. And that's part of the reason you and I were talking about this off the air about, like, what the Mavericks did with Doncic and trading him. Like, if you just say straight up, like, hey, the second apron is tough and we can't mortgage our future on $400 million for one guy because we're not going to be able to build around him, that actually makes a lot more sense in modern NBA times, especially going into this new CBA. Like, that makes a lot more sense than just being like, well, you know, we thought Anthony Davis was really going to help us make a... No, you didn't think that. You didn't think that. It was the money.
Didn't think you were going to get more for him.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the infuriating
part. It's almost always the money.
It's almost always the money. Just say it's the money. Just right. Say that, makes sense in the modern NBA now.
But then shop him to the rest of the league because Rudy Gobert got you 4 first-rounders.
Which is still ridiculous that Rudy Gobert got you 4 first-rounders. I just want to point that out.
Well, I think you actually let up and if people knew, if they had 48 hours to know that Luka Doncic was available,
everybody puts their best bid in.
You have no idea the amount of draft picks that would have been flying
Everybody
around.
Puts their best bid in at that point.
You'd have a 2057 draft pick on the table, for goodness sake.
Sam Presti has given you like the deed to like his 19th house at that point, you know, wherever that is.
Just the Oklahoma panhandle just immediately seeds to the team.
You own Lawton, Oklahoma now, actually, where Stacey's
most
from.
Most of the state, actually.
I think the second apron makes a lot of sense, like with where GMs are at right now. And actually, like, Arturis's messaging on that actually makes more sense to me now, because it's like, yeah, you might actually have to be in a position where your entire roster has to be better than the 2 or 3 stars that Boston is going to have for the next, you know, 6 years with Brown and Tatum, or if Donovan Mitchell is going to be there for another 3 years in Cleveland. You're going to, like, the sum of your parts have to be better than the Knicks. Mm-hmm. They have to be better than the Bucks. They have to be better than the Pacers, all that stuff. And it actually makes a lot more sense now that the smoke has cleared and you see, yeah, this is probably going to be a league where that's the push now. You're not going to be able to do the 2 or 3 superstar max, you know, multiple max contracts or 3 or 4 max contracts. There's only going to be a few owners in this league that are going to be willing to pay that anyway. And there only are a few owners in this league that are willing to pay it. That's probably going to get trimmed down by a couple. So it's really going to be up to the sum of parts for a lot of teams if they want to be contenders. And I would say that in the Western Conference too, which is significantly more competitive. And guess what? Those teams all have young budding stars, and the sum of their parts are really, really good. So I feel more comfortable with the direction of this organization now and where it's heading. Obviously, the next 2 months, the 2 or 3 moves that are essential, you know, Giddy, what are you going to do with Kobe White? What are you going to do with Vucevic? And who are you going to draft? Those are still the biggest looming questions. But I do think the direction of where this organization is looking relative to the rest of the league, relative to that second apron, makes a lot more sense now than it did like 2 months ago.
That is
this season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus, tax for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy, and no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The voice of Adam Amin, the CHSN Bulls play-by-play announcer, joining us here on Score Middays later, Raheem and Marshall Harris. And let's go back to the micro a little bit, because there is a game tomorrow.
Sure.
And I'm a little concerned because Josh Giddey has an issue with his right wrist. How much do you know about that and how much that's limiting him? Because in the box score and to the eye test, he seems to be doing just fine.
Yeah, there's a little bit more uncertainty about it than there was maybe 3 days ago. Just the language that's been used about it, because at first it was like, yeah, they're resting him. He's got this nagging forearm wrist issue. Then it was, well, there's a high level of optimism that he's going to play. And it's like, well, now you're using language that indicates that there was a significant level of concern prior to that. So that is the biggest concern, I think, is Giddey going to be healthy enough to play? In my head and in my heart, I'm convinced you're going to see him in the starting lineup, obviously, tomorrow night when the Bulls and Heat play. But without him, I think you saw, even when he was healthy and he just was on the bench, you see the impact now. This is a much better downhill driving team than it was in the prior iteration. And that's not a knock on Zach LaVine, because I think he is one of the best quick first step guys in the NBA. But when it comes within a flow of an offense, I think it really sets up a lot more. That's why I think Kevin Huerter has gotten into a position where he looks like his old self. I was actually talking with his parents the other day. They were at one of the games, Tom and Aaron. They came in from New York, and they were kind of saying the same thing. Like, just he looks comfortable, he looks happy, and the way that this system works with Giddey at the forefront of it has a lot to do with, A, are you making the right entry feed, and B, can you get past your defender to at least set up the rest of the offense? NBA defense is forcing actions, right? You're trying to force NBA defenses into as many actions as possible, because the thought is eventually there's going to be a mistake and the domino effect eventually takes place to get an open look or a better shot. And I think the Bulls were very good at forcing a second action from a defense in its prior iteration. I think now they're much better at forcing a third or fourth action from the defense, and the likelihood of getting a better shot just goes up the more actions the defense has to go through. I think Josh is a great example of why the Bulls offense has been able to do that. Like, watch the Heat. If they're playing well, the Heat are probably scrambling by the time you get down to like 7 or 6 on the shot clock somewhere in their defense, right? That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, the extra pass, I think. And I did just get the visual of Tyler Hero pulling up for 3. We were at the game last week.
We did not
get to hear your call. Was Stacey just offended?
Afterwards, I think we were both kind of shell-shocked, and obviously we're still calling the moment there. And again, if he hits the shot, it's a 2-point game, and now the complexion of that final, 25 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever it was, changes drastically. That being said, Matas Bouzelis took a very quick shot with a lead intact, right? With a five-point lead, I think it was at the time. I think it was, 114 to 109?
Yeah, when he took the shot, we literally got up and left. That was our cue to leave after he hits the shot.
But
he made it. And that's the difference. And
they were set. There was a half-court set there.
It was Huerter. It was an open corner look. It was a great setup. I have no issue with him taking the shot. I also don't have that much issue with Tyler Hero taking the 3. I don't have an issue. I would prefer what Stacey was saying. I would prefer that you take the 2 points with that much time on the clock.
Yep.
Take the 2, make it a 1-possession game. You're going to have to get a defensive stop anyway, unless you really want to get into the tactical nature of, well, we're down by, or we're down 2, so now we'll foul, or I guess if you're down 2, you maybe foul, you hope you get a miss out of it and try to extend the game. But you're going to need a defensive stop somewhere in the final 20 seconds anyway, so I'm good with just taking the 2 points because you had 2 guaranteed points at that point. But if he makes the shot,
I love his basketball.
If he makes the shot, most of this league, I try not to create narratives based on result, right? Like, you know, there's West Wing fans in this.
Causation.
There's West Wing fans in here. It's like, you know, post hoc ergo propter hoc, after therefore because. Something took place, then something took place afterwards, so naturally the thing that took place prior is the reason for it. That's not always the case.
In fact, that's
very rarely true. So if Hero makes that shot, you're like, oh man, what a gutsy shot that he took. I'm okay with him taking the shot. My preference is that you go in and get the easy two to extend the game a little bit. But I'm not. I have no issue with him taking that shot.
I always go for the high percentage play.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that's a higher percentage play to take the layup.
High percentage play is still at that point the layup with nobody within 20 feet of you.
Exactly. I agree with that, but I understand why he's taking the shot.
And I understand too.
I also
it was just a funny play that is worth discussing.
It was just
playing
hilarious.
The same team again.
It was just hilarious to see it, and then the fact that Bouzelis made the shot
within the first four seconds of the shot clock.
Herter raced down, found Bouzelis. He easily could have dribbled it out to burn some more clock, and he's like, "No, I'm going to." I can't say that Heroes was a bad shot and Bouzelis's was great just because of the result. I just think that it was cool that Modis hit the shot and then had the look on his face of a cold-blooded assassin.
He did, man, and he's so young. I was like, oh.
He's 20 years old. I did not have that wherewithal at age 20. I don't have that wherewithal at 38.
I don't have that wherewithal either.